there's a moment in which if you are surrounded by your material, surrounded by your working space, you are bored, you don't know what to do, there's a moment in which you reach a place where you almost become a child again. And this idea of like the playfulness with the things that you have around can come back. And then you go to places you never expected to.
Says Eva Fabregas, whom we had the pleasure to meet for another episode of our Kunstpause Stoberkreis podcast. Eva has just opened her exhibition at Hamburger Bahnhof Nationalgalerie der Gegenwart. And for this special episode in English, we will mostly focus on her work at Hamburger Bahnhof and her practice in general. But before, we will ultimately dive into one of the works she chose from National Gallery's collection, which is a work by the artist Rebecca Horn. Eva, before you arrived in Berlin, I've just had the pleasure to discover your work actually at the Lyon Biennale, also curated by Till Fellrath and Sam Badawi last year. But when you started studying in London as well as in Barcelona, right? Okay. You immediately, I think, took the way into sculpture. Is that also the reason why you wanted to select a work by Rebecca Horn?
I think that when I was studying, I was not really studying sculpture. I was studying other things. But for me, Rebecca Horn, it's an artist that maybe I discovered her in full not so long ago. And I understood that we had so many similarities, maybe, no? Like the idea of approaching sculpture, not just like a fixed object, but something that can be maybe like a prosthetic that comes from your body, or like a performative object that performs things in life, no? That maybe they can be part of your body, they can be part of the surroundings. And that's something I think we have both in common, and that is fascinating for me about her.
What work by Rebecca is it actually?
Where do we start with Rebecca Horn in general? She's known here for her kinetic sculptures that engage with the viewer and create immersive experiences. And many of her works feature elements of movement, sound, and interaction. And I was so happy that you selected a piece by Rebecca Horn, because I can still remember one of my first exhibitions I visited as a child in Neue Nationalgalerie. And you selected the artwork titled Caressing the Egg Between, from 2007. And it's a very interesting piece, because two brushes rub against an egg. The temperature of this egg is monitored by a thermometer. Yeah, and it's a really interesting piece, and it's I've never seen it in original, but it's interesting that you've chosen this one.
Yeah, I've never seen it either in real life, but just seeing the picture and imagining what was happening in the work, I could immediately relate that maybe this is like a love affair, no, between the egg and the brushes. Like there's a romantic relationship between something organic and something mechanical, or like in organics. For me, it's like grasping an emotion that comes from these two different worlds, no? From something that is organic, something that is inorganic. So I was very interested how she dealt with that in that piece.
Oh, nice. For me, it's a relationship between nature and technology, so also in interpretation maybe, but the love affair is much more interesting maybe.
Yeah, I think that maybe also it's like she approaches all the materials that she works with in the same way, no? It's through emotions, and it's through a desire, and it's through a connection between herself, I would say. And I feel like she deals with objects as having like close relationships with them, and sometimes love affairs with them.
And erotic affairs.
And erotic affairs, of course.
There's mechanical. A lot about erotism in her work.
Totally, yeah.
Which is also partly in your work, I must say. One of my experiences from the Lyon Biennale, when I first encountered your work, was really that as an audience, you immediately start interacting with it. You immediately turn around it, want to understand it, don't quite get it, feel mixed between being amazed by it and repulsed by it at the same time. Is interaction something that you are mostly looking for as an artist?
I never use the word interaction, but for me, sculptural practice has to do with somatics and has to do with my own body in relationship to a space and to materials. So I cannot really understand a practice where, like, not interaction, but maybe the somatics are implied on the work, no? For me, I think I learn through my fingers. I learn through touch and through direct engagement, my body with the materials and with the architecture. So I think that then the audiences get also this kind of immediate relationship to those volumes inside the space, no? That's why also you want to maybe walk it. You sometimes feel yourself as being an ant in around those shapes because of their scale. So I play a lot with these kind of things.
So Eva, tell me, Sam and Till, who you already worked with at the Lyon Biennale, invited you to Berlin. What was your first reaction when you saw this great train hall of Hamburger Bahnhof Nationalgalerie der Gegenwart?
Oh, that it was a very good challenge to take. I was very, very excited. And at the same time, like, the scale was, I don't know, 10 times more bigger than anything I've done in the past. So, but I think that you cannot be creative also if there's no challenges, no? I will get bored if I didn't had any of these kind of challenges. So for me, it was like, okay, let's go for it.
So you accepted the challenge and visibly it turned out into a wonderful exhibition.
Thank you.
you've already spoken of your work as bodily. How do these bodies actually come to life? I had the chance to get some glimpses of the creation process at Hamburger Bahnhof, and I don't want to spoil too much of your practice because you should be the one who communicates about it. But maybe you can tell us a little bit about that process of creation that is needed in order to let these beings, and I would speak of them as beings, come to life.
So there's different stages, no? Like, there's the first stage where I would say I give shapes to materials in my studios. I work in a very intuitive manner right now, I would say. For example, I have, like, in my computer tons of images that are, like, organized by folders that they go from sex toys to ergonomic objects to polyps or mollusks, organs, genitals. So there's all this kind of imaginary that I carry with me, that I'm interested, that I collect, no, in my computer. But I think that those shapes come after in a more intuitive way. There's not a specific plan on reproducing one of these things that I'm interested with, but it's more like a blur between those shapes, forms, and, but not just about shapes and forms, maybe sometimes also feelings, emotions that I carry with me that are mixed and blurred. I think I've almost never done a sculpture that doesn't change in the space. That's something that it's quite particular in my practice. I don't understand a sculpture. I think I've never done a sculpture that I feel it's finished, because it always transforms when I'm inside the architecture. So I carry this shape that I've already built up in the studio. But then once we are in the architecture, like in Hamburger Bahnhof, for example, those shapes are inflated with air, no? They are the air is the main material that makes this shape alive. Air is a material that permits me to adapt these sculptures to the architecture. So it's mostly a collaboration, I would say, between the materials, between the architecture, and between myself, no? Once they are there, they want to be in the space in very specific ways. Like, you may want them to sit on a corner in a specific way, but they will tell you how they want to, and you need to listen them. It's very important to listen to them.
This means you arrived in Berlin with a certain plan and idea, but then now having worked in the space, you kind of need to get lost of the plan again.
Yeah, I always need a plan to just disorder myself when I arrived, you know? Yeah.
Way to put it.
Yeah, so it's not that you just prepare a scale model and then you prepare it piece by piece at Hamburger Bahnhof, for example.
I've never worked with scale models. But sometimes I need to do it just to understand a bit the scale in relationship to a space, but I've never done a scale model of the architecture, for example. Mostly I work, there's specific places, for example, the historic hall at the Hamburger Bahnhof that really inspire me. If you give me a white cube, maybe it's more difficult, but if I come to a site visit to Bahnhof, I immediately react to the space with images, with feelings, with emotions, and I really try to trust those first intuition in the process of working the plan of the exhibition. And it's mostly about drawings.
Hamburger Bahnhof, what is interesting, I saw you interact a lot with the metal structure of the building, right?
Yeah.
It almost feels as if your sculpture is kind of taking over, or whether it's natural or body, I can't really tell, but it's kind of englobing the building.
And I had another association. It was like an infection of the Hamburger Bahnhof, mm-hmm. like a virus.
But
or
a good
something.
Infection.
A good in, a laugh infection.
A pink
maybe.
Infection.
Well, you don't know if it's good or not. It's an infection. I really thought of it as an infection, mm-hmm. as like an organic growth that is taking over the architecture. It has these pink colors, maybe, no? But it's like the scale and the idea of infection, or like the proliferation and growth, is something very ambivalent, no? You can have like a weed growing out of a garden, that's a growth, but you can also have a tumor eating your insides. And there's these two same ideas embedded in the idea of an uncontrollable growth, no? Mm-hmm. So I really think I play a lot with this ambivalence.
You mentioned those pink shades, and I also noticed pastel shades. And of course, the big organic forms as recurring symbols in your work. Are there any other recurring symbols or motifs, and what represent or signify to you those pastel shapes, for example? This would be very interesting.
Yes, air. And this is something I just realized quite recently. Like, my main material, the way I create shapes, the way I think now with shapes is through air, is through inflatables. And not just with the works that you've seen in Hamburger Bahnhof, that they are directly inflatables, but in all my other sculptural practice, air is the main material, although maybe you don't see it. For example, I have like silicone sculptures, and the mold is shaped by air. And I also have some other resin spheres that they are like hollow membranes that are made with latex balloon, but the air is extracted. They are like the leftovers of this process of having an air embedded into a material. I would say air is one of the symbols right now of my work.
In talking about ambivalences, air is per se maybe the most ambivalent material, because it's everywhere and yet it's never present, or mm-hmm. it's hard to grasp. It's something which is now between you and us,
yeah.
sitting here. It's transmitting our voices, it's transmitting viruses, it's transmitting love, though it's invisible. And so kind of you, through as making it your material, you don't really make it visible, but at the same time you refer to it. Is it a reference to air?
No, I wouldn't say it's a reference. I think it comes from... The thing is that when I was younger, I was 12 years singing in a choir. That was my main, formative experience.
Working with air already.
Yes. And I always felt a bit like a fish out of water when it comes to verbal expression, or like language or words. And for me, singing was a very formative experience. No, for me, I understood, like, it was much more embedded way of communicating. And I begin understanding in that moment air as a tangible material. Mm-hmm. No, like, different voices could fill up a space depending on the type of architecture mm-hmm. that we were singing on. Sometimes there's architectures that they just cut the voice. Mm-hmm. And for example, the first day that I arrived to the site visit at Hamburger Bahnhof, one of the main things that fascinated me, it was the acoustics of the mm-hmm. space. Mm-hmm. No, it's like a church-like building. And I was
like an empty factory.
Yes. Yeah. But the acoustics are amazing. Yeah. You are in one side of the space and you produce a sound, and that sound travels immediately to the other side. Mm-hmm. It's almost like 100 meters. Mm-hmm. So it's quite interesting. And I could picture this idea of like a bubble that was inflating when I was creating that sound. And it, like, that bubble was swallowing and devouring the different places of the architecture, like coming to the corners and eating the insides of the arches, those triangles that the arches make. And I think that was one of the main starting points to begin thinking on that space.
In one interview, you once said that you have to be just surrounded by your materials in your studio so you can easily get bored. This was very funny for me. Please let us know more about getting bored as a starting point of your artistic process.
More than the starting point, I would say that it's like you need to be in good terms with the idea of being bored in the studio. Procrastination, but with your materials,
yes.
You know, like not having maybe the computer, not having the phone around.
Once, it's like a soup that is kind of cooking on a low fire.
Totally. Like there was a teacher once in London that told me that, no, that being bored in the studio is part of the creative process. And for me, that was a relief. And I began understanding this idea some years after, because there's a moment in which if you are surrounded by your materials, surrounded by your working space, you are bored, you don't know what to do. There's a moment in which you reach a place where you almost become a child again. And this idea of like the playfulness with the things that you have around can come back. And then you go to places you never expected to. So I think that's why it's quite important to be fine with the idea of getting bored in the studio.
And you work from your studio in London and Barcelona. Can you describe us a typical day in your studio? And what are things that you, besides materials, surround yourself with? I heard that you have a lot of plans, and I also find those shades in your work. So it's what does your studio look
plans
like?
And sex toys.
Plans and sex toys.
Right now, like I was living in London for 12 years, but I moved back to Barcelona. That's where I come from. So I don't have two studios. I don't have a studio. I would love to, but no. So I just moved back to Barcelona 2 months ago. And of course, plans couldn't come with me because it's Brexit. You cannot like travel with plans. So I had to give out all my plans to my friends, and I'm happy that they are staying with them. Yeah, but normal day in the studio, it changes almost every day or almost every week. Because of course, yeah, we imagine that being an artist is maybe just creative work, but there's a lot of other types of work that need to be happening there. So there's days that I'm just in the computer going through my invoices, but then there's days that it's just meetings and emails. Then there's days that it's just production, like very strict production mode where you know where you have to do and there's a deadline and you are just like producing it. And then there's days that it's just playing around. Those are one of the most fun ones.
Positive boredom.
Yes.
What's interesting about your practice is also that obviously for these massive sculptures, you rely on help. You need to work with teams, assistance, so to speak. How do you perceive this process of being all with yourself, bored in the studio, in the most positive sense of the term, and then swelling up like one of your bodies that you are actually creating together with a team, and then reducing again. What do you like about that? And what's maybe also the challenge in this changing working modes, which you both know?
It's funny because I've always worked alone in the studio, and right now, like this change of scale of having the show at Hamburger Bahnhof, that also meant a change of scale in the way I work in the studio. For the first time, I also had some assistants in the studio, but I've never had them before. So it was a challenge and an amazing experience at the same time. And it was a shared process with a lot of people. And I enjoyed that. And then we came to the Hamburger Bahnhof, no, where there's now around 15 people helping me build up these sculptures and install them in the space. It's a very collaborative process. I was saying, no, it's not just collaborating with people, but also collaborating with the architecture. And the assistants are collaborating with sculptures too. So I always feel like there's like a connection, like there's a learning process while people are working with them, and they begin more experts day by day on what they are doing, and they begin understanding better the materiality and the physics and the restrictions that these sculptures have. Just knowing those things makes them a very reliable persons to be collaborating with, you know? And when we are installing them in the space, we always say, okay, let's see what they want to tell us. Let's see how they want to sit in this space. And there's a long like conversation between us humans and between the space and between the sculptures.
One thing that is also quite unusual about your works is that there is hardly any restrictions for the audience. We are allowed or even invited to interact with them. We can touch them. We can have a tactile sensation with them.
Yes, not always. No. It depends a lot on the space, though.
So I'm wondering the status of the object. Like you before, you also said you don't really work that well in the white cube. So I feel there is a kind of radical thinking also that you practice about the status of the artistic object.
Yeah, to begin with, I don't understand them as objects. Yeah. I don't know. I couldn't approach them as objects. For me, they are like organisms. They are
beings.
Creatures. They are beings. They have a life of their own once I'm not dealing with them. And you were also referring to the idea of touch. I've already talked now about my way of approaching, I think, sculpture. So I think that like we've been raised in a Western culture in a way that we privilege the mind over the body. For me, it has been a very important moment to understand that our fingers, our hands, our skin can also tell us things and be a tool for learning the world around us, no? Like, and that's part of how I deal also with my world and my sculptures. So I would say that I cannot really imagine my works without this somatic aspect. Although I think that sometimes I allow people to touch them, sometimes I don't allow people to, like audience, to touch the sculptures. Because for me, the most important thing is not the touch, the direct touch, but maybe this desire that people has to approach the sculptures with their own body. And sometimes, just like the experience that they are creating in their head is much more valid than the touch, you know? So I'm very interested also in.
That's very interesting. I mean, it ultimately relates in a way to some of the works by Rebecca Horn.
Yeah,
yeah, because some of them are relics of performances. Most of them play with the desire of the audience to touch, mm-hmm. to maybe even eat.
Yeah.
I remember one of her works, which has six little oysters, which are glued to a wall on a little mechanical system, which have each pearls in them. And ultimately, you want to have that pearl, right? Because it's moving, it's making a sound, you want to get that pearl. It's a game, you know?
Yeah.
So is there also a playfulness, or can you identify with the idea of game, play?
Of course, yeah, a lot. Yeah, what I think I wouldn't be creative if I was not playing in the studio, you know, that's my main way of, like, my creative process, I would say. And also with Rebecca Horn, I think that some of the body parts that she has created are body parts, no? They are like prosthetics of the body of herself, but also maybe prosthetics that we can imagine wearing and being part of our own body. And I really understand the works that I do in that same way. We could be the prosthetics of the sculpture, or the sculpture can be our own prosthetics, or the prosthetic of the architecture. You never know where is the end or the beginning, no?
Eva Fabregas, we started talking about Rebecca Horn. We've now ended with Rebecca Horn. Everybody's invited to see your show starting now at Hamburger Bahnhof. Be open, be playful, let room for boredom in the most creative sense of the term. And we're very happy to have you in our show.
What is your favorite museum?
That's a difficult question. There are quite a few favorites. I love visiting the Barbican in London, especially because of its brutalist architecture and because it reminds me of being in a Ballard's novel.
very nice place. I've been there this spring and it was amazing. I hope we have a place like this here in Bergen.
I'd love to see a show of you there.
Imagine growing out of,
Be cool. And what is your favorite place in Bergen, London or Barcelona?
Depends on the mood. I often get very, inspired by being on the beach reading a very good novel. But I've also enjoyed a lot having like long nights at Corsica Studios in London, where the sub buses make you feel the sound and music in your own stomach. No, it's not just about listening, but feeling sound in your body. So it's a mix of places, I would say, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you currently learning something new?
Yeah, tarot. But not as a fortune-telling exercise, but more as a tool for self-reflection. Yeah, and to gain other perspectives of my present and maybe possible.
What did you already learn in tarot about yourself?
It's a very long process, I would say. What I do is that every day I just like ask a question and I raise a card, and from that card I just try to be intuitive. Told me that if you just do this process every day for a long time, you will begin being more experienced about it. So I'm doing that right now.
What is something you have recently failed at?
So to be honest, I've recently failed at having fun. That's I need to have a better balance between work and leisure. But if we talk about when it comes to art making itself, I don't understand failure as something negative. For me, my work is rather a process based, and some of the works that I've developed come from failure. You know, like some having a bad cure or like a bad mixing or a puncture in a bowl has been part of a process where I then have a sculpture that I would never have thought of. So for me, these kind of failings in the studio are magical.
And my last question is, what are you curious about at the moment?
I'm curious about making one of my sculptures sweat, for example.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
for the conversation.
Lot.